It's showtime.
Go head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Pycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And here we go, off and running. On this, the ninth day of December, 2019, this is The Horn. HeadOn.live is where you'll find us on the interweb tubes, Monday through Friday, from 5 p.m. Eastern to 8 p.m. Eastern, and 2 to 5 Pacific time. This is the brand new broadcast schedule. Welcome to it. It'll stay this way for the foreseeable future. Maybe it'll become a permanent thing. You know, there were some suggestions made along the way that said that perhaps there was a paucity of progressive broadcasting in this little area right here. So maybe this is a way for us to invite more folks into this merry little conversation we have going on here. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. It is Moran Monday on the Horn. And, every program here begins with gratitude. So this program should be no different, okay? So thanks going out over the course of the weekend. Thanks going out to Brock, and thanks going out to Reed. Thank you very kindly to Dr. Allen in Texas. Thank you very kindly to Brendan and to Tom and to Cecilia. Thank you to Marsha. Thank you to Sue, For Earth, our pal out in, formerly the Great Northwest and Alaska and Central America, and now of Georgia. Thank you to Dwayne. Thank you to Nancy. And today, thanks to Khalil. And a little reminder here, once upon a time, the 13th of the month was the loneliest day of the month for subscribers at The Horn. Well, that's changed now. And in point of fact, the 9th day of the month is the loneliest subscriber day of the month. And so Khalil is all alone today, and would love to have some company, I'm sure. So if you're in a subscribing kind of mood, this would be a great day to do it. If you're listening in delay to the podcast and you say, well, gosh, it's already the 10th now, that's okay too. We need more subscribers on the 10th as well. But there's only one on the 9th. So if somebody would like to jump into the tune of, less than half the cost of a package of juicy fruit, because that's how it works out. If you're a $10 a month subscriber, you're giving up less than half of a pack of juicy fruit per day to support progressive, liberal, non-commercial, non-capitalist broadcasting. Unlike anything else that's going on out there, as far as I can tell. Okay, so that's where we are, and in terms of getting the second full week of December started, we're behind. Actually, we're at $290. We closed the week behind by $90, and so we've got today's fundraising goal plus 90 more, and hopefully that gets met, and then we'll see where it all. We'll see where that puts us tomorrow. But thanks, sincere thanks, to all our subscribers over the weekend, and hopefully Khalil will get some company as far as being a subscriber on the ninth day of the month. All right. So again, like I said, that this evening, this afternoon, marks our, because I think evening begins at 6 p.m., doesn't it? So this afternoon marks a change in the broadcast schedule that should go on for a while. The holidays are upon us. I think it's safe to say, looking forward, there will probably be no New Year's Eve program and no program on Christmas. But that's about it as far as differences going forward for the time being. So it's more in Monday too. So as we wait for Khalil to get some company, maybe, or somebody to take the first bite out of the $290 fundraising goal, yeah, let's get going on what is very obviously a moron-laden Monday. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
You've got to remember that these are just simple farmers. These are people of the land. You know, morons.
Hurry, hurry, hurry. Step right up. You will not believe your ears. It's Moran Monday on the horn. We've got them all for you right here behind this thin cybernetic veil of canvas just off the Carnival Midway, where only moments ago you were throwing ping pong balls at goldfish bowls in the vain hope of taking home a wee tiny baby iguana that will someday grow to be the size of a Volkswagen Beetle and probably eat you and your entire family. No, I'm just kidding. Iguanas are vegetarians. Nonetheless, right here behind this thin cybernetic veil of canvas resides all manner of morons. That's right, birthers, deathers, ninthers, tenthers, baggers, birchers, booger eaters, libertarians, maggots, trumpanzees, republicans, one and all, right back here behind the cybernetic veil. Yes, indeed, friends and neighbors, kitties and cousins, aunts and uncles, all you gotta do is, if you wanna be a Moran Monday subscriber, just crank out less than half of a pack of Juicy Fruit gum, or spearmint, or double mint, depending, or hey, even Big Red. Lots of unpaid product placement here this evening on the horn, and you'll be right there amongst them, because, you know, we can't do this for free, and... Well, this is, you can't tell the morons without a program, and this is the program that tells the morons. You just can't tell them much. So, generally speaking, a kind and gentle reminder that for folks passing beyond the thin cybernetic veil, well, keep a hand on purses and wallets, necklaces, bracelets, rings, ankle bracelets, toe rings, tongue studs, those little booger stalactites that women put into the sides of their noses. Keep an eye on, and of course this also applies to children, small dogs, European messenger bags, and yes, even that iguana that you won throwing ping pong balls at goldfish bowls, and now you're struggling to figure out what in God's name you're going to do with it when you get it home. Keep a hand and eye and be on all of those things, because, of course, the morons can get grabby. Head to the hills or you'll be up to your armpits in morons. Oh, yeah, you will. You will. I promise it, because brethren and sistren, and that's Wednesday, of course, but brethren and sistren, today, oh, my God, it was a moron convention in the House Judiciary Committee. It was. And I'm happy to announce that we are off and running, and the 290 is now 280, thanks to Steve from Georgia Stan and Miss Karen and little Cletus and little Twiggy. Thank you very kindly indeed, Steve, and hopefully other folks will follow behind you in short order. Now, I realize I've been in seeing Steve pop in, I realized that I have been remiss. I've been remiss, and I forgot to do something here, so time out for just a moment. Because I'm not in the chat room. Thanks for the reminder, Steve. That just triggered my little old memory brain. Let's go there. See who's hanging out, shall we? And hopefully we're getting in there now. All right, so yeah, and the reminder, if you'd like to be part of the Merry Madcap Wacky Zany real-time multimedia extravaganza that is the Horn Chat Room, wander on over to headon.live, click on the chat room tab, and you'll if you don't already, pick out a screen name and a password, and jump right in. You'll be immediately greeted by early arrivers Anatole and Squeaky, and capably moderated by longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who, although he is a third-stage guild navigator, even third-stage guild navigators don't always fold space. So Sparky's just Sparky this evening. And right there alongside him, pinch-hit midweek chat room utility moderator and all-around great guy, Steve from Georgistan. And I'm in there, too. Yay! So that's that helps. That helps a lot. And like I said, we are beset with Morans, because they all gathered in the House Judiciary Committee today, because today was the case of the impeachment taken forward with evidence being presented by lawyers. Barry Burke for the Democrats, and Stephen Castor, poor Stephen Castor. I don't know what his mother expected of him in life, but his career is flagging and flailing, were it not for the existence of Wingnut Welfare and various and sundry think tanks. Because I don't think he's got a very bright future out in the general practice and law kind of. No. I mean, if you were charged with a crime, you would not hire Stephen Castor, because he's not very good at defending. At defending someone charged with breaking the law. It was earlier today when Stephen Castor took off in what turned out to be a not exactly rousing defense of Donald Trump. No, he offered his opening statement this morning. I watched it. I'm sure you did too. And he talked about everything except the fact that, I mean, it's not like he didn't even try to say that Donald Trump didn't do it. I mean, there wasn't even so much as a Colonel Mustard in the conservatory with the candlestick. Somebody else. No. And as we've noted in the past, you know, there's music between the actual notes. The silent stuff is music, too. And so today, this morning, he argued, he presented the Michael Cohen argument. He went after Democrats for bringing Michael Cohen in to testify after he'd already pleaded guilty to lying to Congress. And Stephen Castor didn't, well, Stephen Castor thought that was not great strategy. But neither juries nor members of the House nor the American citizens writ large are stupid. They can tell when they're being snowed. And when he attacked the credibility of Michael Cohen, but did not bring up the fact that that when he was busted for lying to Congress, the lies he told were to the benefit of Donald Trump. We all heard the silence between the notes. And disgraced felon, yeah, that was funny. But he was bad. But that was just the beginning of bad. Because we went from bad to stupid. Oh, yes. And when you're talking about stupid and you're talking about Moran Monday, well, it almost goes without saying that at some point in time, you're going to have to hear from that proud son of the first congressional district of Texas. I'm talking about Louis Asparagus Gohmert. You might recall last week when some maggot or another suggested impeaching Barack Obama now that he's not in office anymore. Well, continuing in that vein, we got Louis. Oh, we got Louis. Come on. You can do it, Louis. There we go.
Mr. Gohmert. Well, I had some questions for the witness, Mr. Burke, but he has absconded. So I'm going to use my 5 minutes, but not to ask questions.
You know,
it is interesting, absconded? Though, I've heard Mr. Goldman refuse to answer a question about the investigation, yet he comes in here, and the very reason that he wants to see the president for the first time, any president's ever been removed from office, why he's been obstructing. He didn't answer our question. So perhaps if we're going to apply his sense of justice to him, it would be time to have him removed from his position. But that's only if we apply his...
You know, it occurs to me I made a terrible mistake here. I didn't issue the hockey puck warning. Because a hockey puck is most definitely called for. Oh, it so is. Because otherwise you're going to be barking. You're going to be howling. You're going to be right out the door and running rabbits and eating dirt and screaming because there is IQ-lowering stupidity at play here. I love how Louis Asparagus Gohmert describes counsel as having absconded. Abscond? Abscond. Why, let's look up that word. That's a very interesting word to be using. Absconded? Abscond. I wonder what the dictionary says about abscond. Son of a gun. Abscond. Merriam-Webster, the generally accepted dictionary definition here in the new 90 states of America. Abscond. A verb. To depart secretly and hide oneself. Another definition saying to leave hurriedly and secretly. Typically to avoid detection of or arrest for an unlawful action such as theft. Now, we understand that because of the operation of the speech and debate clause, that Louis Gohmert cannot be held to account by any court of competent jurisdiction anywhere in Merca for what he just said. But by using the word abscond, he accused Lawyer Burke of criminal conduct, which in any other circumstance would be actionable slander. But you get to do that if you're a Congress critter. Oh, and it was a bizarre day. It started out bizarrely. Representative Nadler had barely started speaking when some, I don't know, if I had to give him a name, I would call him Neckbeard McMaggot, some dude in a suit. Maybe I heard this wrong, but some dude in a suit. With a hipster beard, stood up and started screaming from the back of the room, and the only part I could pick up was, "We voted for Donald Trump." Hey, Jesus. And then he was quietly escorted from the room and sadly not hung up by his thumbs or anything like that, or waterboarded for a little while. I mean, they like that sort of thing, the maggots, and the Republicans do, or at least they used to. But that was just the beginning. And then the Louis of the world, the Gohmerts of the world, chimed in. We'll get back to that. And just a reminder here, as we're about 20 minutes into the program, this is the brand new live listening schedule. We start at 5 p.m. Eastern Time and go to 8 p.m. Eastern Time instead of 6 to 9. Generally speaking, like I said before, it won't make any difference to folks who listen to the podcast, but for the live audience, there's this. It's going to be really funny or odd when 6 o'clock rolls around and everybody come and a bunch of people come in and say, "Hey, what's happening? Why is the program already going on?" Well, I announced it all last week and some of the week before, I think. Yeah. But, yeah, the program will start at 5 p.m. Eastern. Here, let's go through the time zones. 5 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Central, 3 p.m. Mountain, and 2 p.m. Pacific, Monday through Friday, for the foreseeable future. It's just moved back an hour, okay? And I guess I'm going to be announcing that periodically through the course of the program just to sort of reinforce it. My apologies to the podcast audience because, well, it doesn't matter to y'all, but apparently I need to do that. But anyway, back to Louis Asparagus Gohmert, who starts out his questioning by slandering a lawyer who did nothing to earn his slander. And by the way, as you watch these things, bear in mind, please. I know, you know, stop telling us how to watch the hearings, Bob. And let's turn off that little noise, too, while we're at it. Goodbye. There we go. Because original Sailor Chick has wandered into the room. Hey, Sailor Chick, good to see you. Sailor Chick says of the hearing, "I have it on, but I can barely watch it." I understand. This is one of those Odysseus lash to the mast kind of days. Only thing is, well, I think this was worse than having to listen to the sirens myself, but I'm funny that way. There's massive amounts of weird and stupid taking place in Washington today, and not a darn thing that anybody can do about it, including the Republicans. But what I was saying is, remember, as you watch this and you see the shitty things that Republicans keep saying about other members, please to remember that if this was 1850... every one of the shitty things that they're saying about their colleagues, the Democrats, would be sufficient to get them called out and probably shot in a duel. Really. Because that's just our history. I'm not saying that should be happening now. We probably wouldn't have any Republicans left if that was the case. But one of the historical parallels that I can't help noticing is that these goddamned Republicans are geographically almost identical to their antecedent forebears, the Southern Conservative Democrats of 1830, 1840, 1850s. And they're trying to do to the Congress what the Southerners did to the Congress back before the Civil War. Now, I'm not saying, we're going to line up. The boys in Butternut are going to take the field. No. This is a different world. But it is it's the same mindset, if you will. And so back to Louis Asparagus Gohmert, who decided he wasn't going to ask any questions. And, you know, and by the way, Doug Mouthful of Collards Collins, he was no better. This whole thing would be a little bit, I don't know, I think I would be able to take it a little bit more seriously were it not for the fact that probably in excess of 80% of the Republican panel sounds like people who didn't get the callback for the hee-haw from the hee-haw auditions. Man, that would have been funny if I hadn't stuttered halfway through it. But it's true. Once again, we have the Confederate contingent being the reason we can't have nice things. So let's go back to Louis Asparagus Gohmert, shall we? I trust no one took the hockey pucks out. Good.
His own standards, and as Chris Plant said, if it weren't for double standards, some of these folks wouldn't have standards at all. But we were told also at the beginning that we would hear lawyers present evidence. Lawyers are going to come in here. Now, what normally happens, and I've been in some kangaroo hearings in courts, not my own when I was there, but
bullshit.
I
have been
treated in hearings before, but I have never seen anything like this where we don't allow the fact witnesses to come in here. We have the lawyers come in and tell us what we're supposed to know about those witnesses and about their testimony and about their impression and what the law is. This is outrageous. My friend Jim Sensenbrenner said in 41 years, he's never seen anything like what we have going on here.
Which is rather hilarious when you consider that Jim Sensenbrenner from Wisconsin and his 41 years were part and parcel of impeaching the President of the United States over a blowjob. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but didn't Ken porn star sit before a House committee and pontificate at great length about all the dirty sexy time business that there Bill Clinton done did? Didn't that happen? Didn't Ken Starr testify about the contents of his? Well, yes, he did, and in the course of an impeachment proceeding, no less. About that. Well, maybe Louis Asparagus Gohmert didn't know about that. He probably wasn't in the Congress yet. He was probably still working hammer and tongs, affirming criminal convictions, sending young black men to the chair in Texas who had been represented by some good old white boy who fell asleep during the trial, and writing opinions about how the Constitution doesn't give you a right not to have your appointed counsel nod off right smack dab in the middle of the trial. So, nobody's perfect. Least of all, Louis Asparagus Gohmert. But he's never heard of such a thing. Well, then again, there's the other problem. If Louis Asparagus Gohmert had bothered to tune in a couple of weeks back, he could have heard just about every one of these witnesses testifying in real life, in the flesh, right there in one of those house office buildings, Longworth, I think it was. But, of course, Louis Asparagus Gohmert, who is so fucking stupid that he couldn't find his ass with both hands, probably couldn't find the hearing room where the Intel Committee met with a seeing eye dog and a GPS. You see how it works. Because the testimony taking place today, and as far as I can tell, still taking place, it was a matter of repeating what the witnesses had said, because the Republicans didn't want to bother to read the transcript.
To try to oust a sitting president. And it's also outrageous to hear people say, well, this man thought he was a king because he said he could do anything he wanted, when they know that that statement was in the context of whether or not he could fire Mueller. And of course he could fire Mueller. He could fire or not fire Mueller. He could appoint a special prosecutor to invest Mueller and Weissman. I think he should have. But that's his prerogative, and he could have done anything about
that. That's it. That's his proctoscope. That's what that is. Poor Louis. All these years getting through life with, at most, half of a human brain. You gotta admire his plucky stick-to-itiveness, Louis Asparagus Gohmert. We're getting a wait a minute from Steve in New York. Hey, wait a sec. Wasn't the whole Intelligence Committee hearing about presenting facts? And also, Sensenbrenner was the one who turned the microphones and lights off at several hearings when the Democrats, then in the minority, protested. Well, of course he did. Because IOKIYAR. And we got some IOKIYAR stuff for later in the program, too. But thanks for recalling that. Robert in Australia asking, did anyone say, I believe in free speech, when that protester was dragged out? It happened here in Australia in our parliament when W came to thank us for helping out in Iraq. In a joint sitting of both houses, Senator Bob Brown stood up to protest what W was saying. He was dragged out by the U.S. Secret Service, who had taken over security at our parliament house because Bush was there. An elected representative of the Australian people dragged out of parliament by the Secret Service of another country. W, almost embarrassed, says, I believe in free speech. The libs, which is because Australia's on the southern hemisphere and the other side around the world, so everything's backwards. The libs, otherwise known as the conservatives, applauded, and everyone else was appalled. Well, not to make bad matters worse or anything, but look, if a couple of guys showed up in white, white togs, with a couple of big butterfly nets and a canvas jacket with those extra long sleeves that go all the way around the back and tie in front, and they dragged out Matt Gaetz or Louis Asparagus Gohmert or both, unlike the situation in Australia some years back, as alluded to by Robert, I don't think that would be a terrible day for freedom. I know for a fact that the IQ of that particular committee would go up by, at least 13 points, being the aggregate of the IQ of the two people I just mentioned. Louis is good for 7 points, and Matt Gaetz on his best day is good for 6. Oh, and well, thank you. Thank you. Note coming from Lady B. Happy semi-new day part. An early fix for my head-on radio listening addiction. She's talking about the program starting at 5 o'clock now, which would be 3 o'clock Mountain. Thank you, Lady B. She says, and it was never about Hillary's goddamned emails. Trump was a fluke. But as soon as the Republicans saw there would be virtually no pushback, they dove right in. If this had been 150 years ago, these assholes would be hung for treason. Or hanged, I don't know. A handful of people should never be allowed to drag the most powerful nation in the world into fascism. If we get out of this, someone has to make sure this never happens again, even if they have to salt the earth afterwards. For better or worse, we're the baddest motherfuckers on earth. We need to act like it. Nunez and Schiff need to draw blood and mop the floor with Gohmert and Jordan's faces in it. They need to make sure Mitch loses majority status or is censored. Nothing should be more important than preserving our republic. Hopefully this is the chance the Dems get to prove it. And they're trying, but it's hard to accomplish when the goddamn clown car keeps showing up and driving in circles in the middle of the hearing room. You know, we heard the music earlier.
That he wanted to take that out of context. He thinks he's a king. Let me tell you what a king is. A king is someone who says over 20 times, I can't do that. Congress has to change the law on immigration. And then he decides, you know what? I got a pen. I got a phone. I'll do whatever I want. And by golly, he does. He makes new law with a pen and a phone. Now, that is more like a monarchy, not somebody saying they can fire a special prosecutor if they want to. And regarding treason, the Constitution itself says you got to have 2 witnesses. And that's not hearsay witnesses. None of this stuff that wouldn't be admissible in any decent court. No, that's 2 direct evidence witnesses that can come in and positively identify themselves, not something they overheard or something, but actually be witnesses to treason. And yet this group comes.
Oh, okay. So there's got to be 2 people who witness the treason. Now we're gonna treat the treason somewhat loosely for the moment here, but we need 2 people who witnessed the treason. Anybody want to go get the Nielsen numbers for the day that Donald Trump stood there outside in front of cameras with live mics and called for China and Ukraine to investigate the Bidens? Anybody want to do that? Because I'm thinking, well. Maybe 2 million witnesses would be overkill. But I think that, and, well, see, that's, when there, we've had some, by the way, we've had some legal education today with Republicans going over and over and over. You know, what is this hearsay I keep hearing about in the law stuff? And then Stephen Castor Oil will say, well, you know, it's not accepted by courts because it is inherently unreliable hearsay. That is repeating something someone else said for the truth of the matter asserted, as we say in law school.
Yes, sir. And there are exceptions to that.
Well, yeah, there's about 23 or 17, you know, Omaha. And those are exceptions to the hearsay rule? Oh, yes, sir.
What they never got around to is the thing that's not an exception. And I've been beaten on this, and I hope I'm doing a little bit of a public service along the way in the process. There's hearsay in the law of evidence. But then there are things that people say which aren't hearsay. Now, if you've got something that is hearsay, there are a bunch of exceptions, and if you can pigeonhole it into one of them, then you still get it into evidence. And remember, Louis Asparagus Gohmert there was having kittens with crocheted tails over, "You're not like any court that I's ever in." Oh, you mean the courts that you go to, Louis, where the people wear those bed sheets and pillowcases over their heads and set fire to crosses in the night? Those kind of courts? The courts with the strange fruit there, Louis? Mm-hmm. You seem the type. But apart from hearsay exceptions, well, there are things that aren't hearsay at all. Even though you may be repeating something someone else said, it's not hearsay. It doesn't even have to reach the analysis of finding out if it fits one of the exceptions. And it's all codified right there in the federal rules of evidence. You can look it up. Don't count on me. It's all right there in the federal rules of evidence. Federal rule of evidence 801. And you get to 801 and you get down, down, down. And you get to D and you down, down, down. And you get to 2 and down, down. And then you get to A. And so there you are. Federal rule of evidence 801. D2A. And you find out that one of the things that the court says, "Fuck this, that ain't hearsay. That's admissible. And a hearsay objection won't lie, it won't be heard." And Federal Rule of Evidence 801 D2A says that one of those things is an admission of a party opponent. So just as an example, for instance, when Nitwit Nero stands in front of a camera with millions of people around the world watching and calls for Ukraine and China to run a smear investigation against a man that for some reason he's terrified of, Joe Biden and his son, Hunter. When he does that, and then later on, when there's a case, Congress, say, versus Donald Trump, with a bill of impeachment, well, that means that the parties to that are Congress, or actually not Congress, but the House of Representatives versus Donald J. Trump. That means that the House of Representatives is a party, and that Donald J. Trump is a party. And once the litigation is joined, those two institutions or individuals become what the law calls party opponents. They're each parties, and they are opposed to one another. Now, let's say you've got multiple parties. Let's say it's the House of Representatives and Bob Kincaid and Brother Deacon Asa versus Donald John Trump. Well, the House could not introduce evidence of things that I or Brother Deacon Asa said, because we're on the same side of the versus, as the House is. So we are parties, but where the House is concerned introducing evidence, we are not party opponents. We're lacking the opponent part. But Donald Trump in this situation is a party opponent. And so, just like it says in the Miranda warnings, anything he says can be used against him in a court of law. And Louis Asparagus Gohmert can pound his asparagus. He can pound the table. He can pound his pud. But it will not stop the actual words said by Donald Trump in front of a camera into a microphone, viewed in real time by millions of human beings here on planet Earth, and then replayed time after time after time after time, from being considered as evidence. And anybody else who tries to tell you otherwise is lying. This is real basic stuff. This is, oh, I took evidence in the second year of law school stuff. This is the stuff that they take the hot wire and run it up your nose and burn it into your brain with. Unless, of course, you're Louis Asparagus Gohmert, in which case, well, you're the hot wire didn't have anywhere to go. Sad like that. No, not the case at all. Jack in Shreveport says, so that rule only holds after the parties are officially joined? No. For instance, let's say there's a car wreck. And for purposes of the hypothetical, nobody was grievously hurt. We'll just worry about the property damage. And let's say the dude who caused the wreck comes up and looks at the person who was driving the other car and says, oh, gee, lady, I didn't mean to do that. But, you know, I guess I wasn't driving so good after I drank that fifth of old Panther piss out of the bar while I was watching the game. Well, there's no litigation at that point. But once it becomes sober lady versus drunk dude from the sports bar, his admission that he caused the wreck himself because he was stinking drunk because he was over at the sports bar drinking old Panther piss becomes an 801 D2A admission of a party opponent. And it's just easy. I mean, one of West Virginia's magistrates, and I'll use them as an example because I don't know about other states, but in West Virginia, to be a magistrate, that is to handle small claims in civil cases and misdemeanors and felony preliminary hearings. In West Virginia, you don't have to have a law degree to be a magistrate. You don't have to be a lawyer to be a magistrate. You don't have to have a college diploma to be a magistrate. You do not have to have a high school diploma to be a magistrate. I don't even think that the qualifying statute even says you have to be literate, but sooner or later, that's sort of as read de facto. But 801 D2A is comprehensible to the brand newest West Virginia magistrate on their first day of work, once you explain it. And so I only mention this because all of this bullshit about hearsay, a great deal of it, if it has to do with anything that Donald Trump said, it's all 801 D2A material. It just is. Now, remember that Louis Asparagus Gohmert said that him saying that he, then I have an Article 2 where I have the right to do whatever I want. Well, Steve went and dug up, as a service of the Horn Ad Hoc Research Department to the community, dug up the relevant stuff. And these are quotes, you know, 801 D2A part, admissions of party opponent by Donald Trump.
First of all, it's very bad for our country. Makes it very hard to deal with Russia. And we should be able, they're a nuclear power. They have a big country. And we should be able to deal with them without having this artificial stuff. But think of it, only 11% in a new poll favor the starting of this ridiculous impeachment hearings that are going on. You hear about it. So I said this morning, I wrote it out. I said, let's see, because I'm watching. It goes on for years and years. No collusion, no obstruction. Really, this really is. This is William Faulkner from Sound and the Fury. This is Benji stuff. It is. Only Benji was more coherent. Oh, that's not good enough. Let's go more. $40 million. Interview 500 people. They got nothing. I could find something. I could take anybody in this audience. Give me $40 million. Give me the unlimited FBI, unlimited interviews, unlimited. They interviewed 500 people. Listen to this. 2,500 subpoenas. They did everything. Their collusion. No collusion. They have no collusion. Then I have an Article 2 where I have the right to do whatever I want as president. But I don't even talk about that because they did a report and there was no obstruction. After looking at it, our great attorney general read it. He's a total professional. He said there's nothing here. There's no obstruction. So they referenced no obstruction. So you have no collusion, no obstruction. And yet it goes on. And they think this is helping them. I personally think it's hurting them. A lot of people think. Yeah. No. Well, that's okay. I mean, Louis got it wrong. But for that matter, Louis gets a lot wrong. Because, well, Louis is really, really special. And if it weren't for the fact that the first congressional district of Texas probably looks like a malaria germ, he would never have gotten to Congress in the first place. But if we go down that road, then there's almost no Republicans in Congress at all. Yeah. Let's enjoy a little bit more of the stylings of the legal stylings of Louis Asparagus Gohmert.
In here, they toss treason out in a report like it's no big deal. We can bring in a bunch of hearsay witnesses, and then we'll have the lawyers testify and then throw a president out of office. This is so absurd. It's so absurd. Now, we have a witness come in, and we're told he's going to be a witness. That's why he doesn't have to follow under the rules of decorum. And then, I've never seen this, he gets to come up and grill his opposing adversary witness. I feel like, to be fair, if we were going to make this thing fair, Mr. Castor would be able to come up and grill Mr. Burke. But this isn't about being fair. It's not about due process. This is about a kangaroo system. And let me tell you, those that think you've
I
done
call
something
him Skippy.
Special here,
Skippy.
You
no,
have
sorry.
Set the bar so low, I'm afraid it's irreparable. I mean, just think, we've had people already mention, you know, the next president, Joe Biden. We're told, you know, gee, he may be the next president. Well, we've already got the forms. All we have to do is eliminate Donald Trump's name and put Joe Biden's name in there because he's on video. He and his son. He basically has admitted.
Yeah, that's the he's on video part is where Joe Biden described the process whereby they got shed of a dirty prosecutor. The prosecutor that's fired that the Republicans are arguing was some sort of saint. No, the dude was dirty as the day is long. And the International Monetary Fund, the European Union, the United States, basically everybody who was involved in trying to root out corruption in Ukraine looked at Barack Obama and said, come on. And Barack Obama said, nah, I'll send Joe. And Joe was real proud of himself because he got to go in and be a tough guy. And he went in and did exactly what everybody wanted done. He wasn't bragging about getting rid of a good prosecutor. He was bragging about running a dirty one out of office. Don't try to explain that to a pig licking, though. Especially not Louis Asparagus Gohmert.
To the crime that's being hoisted on the president improperly.
Hoisted? Hoisted? No. This is one of those little art of word-knowing moments, but no, it's not hoisted, Louis. It's foisted. You know, as in, I got there foist. No, that's F-I-R-S-T. Foist. F-O-I-S-T. Jesus Christ, do I have to do everything around here? Yeah, well, when you're talking about maggots, you kind of do, because they're real stupid. That, or they make certain assumptions about the American people being that way. Well, no, not the American people. They know. They know there's a lot of Americans who aren't stupid. They're just focused on who? Right. The folks, Emery and Marveline there, and the matching Barca loungers down in the single wide at the Ballerina Swan Lake Trailer Park and Country Club watching the Fox News to tell them what happened in the hearing. That's who Louis's talking to.
So I'm scared for my country because I've never seen anything like this. This is supposed to be the Congress. I came up here from a court where we had order and we had rules, and I've seen nothing of the kind in here today, and it's outrageous that we're trying to remove a president with a kangaroo.
They had order and they had rules, and they said it.
Just clarify, treason is not in our report. I just want to...
That's the funny part. Yeah, he came from a court where they disproportionately uphold convictions against African-American young men, but, well, we won't mention that. But so Louis pontificates, and there's all that treason business in there, and then he gets scorched the minute he's quiet because he gets caught lying by counsel. Let's hear that again because that was kind of fun.
To remove a president with a kangaroo court like this. I'll yield back.
Chairman, if I could just clarify, treason is not in our report. I just want
to... The gentleman yielded back.
Yeah, and it is mentioned in the report we got. Thank you very much.
Gentleman yielded back. Mr. Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to get us back to the undisputed facts of the...
Oh, good luck. How about that, though? That's kind of interesting. That was a little brain teaser. It's not in the report, but it's in the report we got. Makes you wonder what report Louis Asparagus Gohmert got. And where did he get it? Did he find it in a box of Cracker Jacks? Or maybe he's reading the wrong report. Maybe it was in a report about, oh, I don't know, Duncan Hunter or something. Stephen, New York, subject line, treason. It's really much simpler than you're expounding. Here's the constitutional provision. Treason against the United States shall consist only in levying war against them or in adhering to their enemies, giving them aid and comfort. No person shall be convicted of treason unless on the testimony of two witnesses to the same overt act or on confession in open court. First of all, I thought the originalists and textualists only looked at the text. Also, along the lines of what Professor Carlin said last week in expounding on bribery, she said the term in the Constitution is not the criminal notion as found in the U.S. Code because the code didn't exist yet. So it was something different than statutory bribery. More importantly, the federal rules of evidence did not even exist at the time the founders drafted the treason definition and the testimony of two witnesses language. So his editorializing about the direct testimony, etc., simply is wrong. The notion under the federal rules of evidence didn't exist, therefore his words are, well, asparagus. Oh! Very nice. Very nice indeed. So, going back to the rules, Jack in Shreveport says, if the same rules apply for civil proceedings, then if the rule wasn't true, you couldn't have oral contracts without a bunch of other specific rules, or you'd have to get a judge to rule on admissibility of statements, or a jury or judge would be finding as fact or not. I think there's specific stuff where written stuff is required, but that's where I'm really going with that question. Well, precisely. And the federal rules of evidence do. I mean, so out there in the world of law land, there are rules of civil procedure and there are rules of criminal procedure. And that's how you go about running a case. The federal rules of evidence, the rules of evidence, obtain with regard to the civil case or the criminal case. That's why it's not the federal rules of criminal evidence or the federal rules of civil evidence. It's the federal rules of evidence. Evidence is evidence. Procedure is different. Meanwhile, note coming in from Kyle. So the Supreme Court today has affirmed that constitutional rights given to certain people are not absolute. A, doesn't this mean the Second Amendment right to keep and bear arms isn't absolute? And B, in your opinion, does this open Pandora's box even more to destroy free speech altogether by putting so many restrictions on it that it may as well no longer be a thing? Or am I reading too much into this decision about the Kentucky abortion law? Yeah, you might be just a little bit over and above and beyond. But the Second Amendment has always been subject to regulation. I mean, no less than fat, dead Tony Scalia said as much the D.C. case that turned the country into a live fire exercise. And Kyle adds, Jesus Christ, how many debunked right-wing talking points can he fit into a little rant? Also, verbal diarrhea much, or just a stream of consciousness? What the fuck? If that's not a walking endorsement for the 25th Amendment, Section 4 to be invoked, I don't know what would be. Well, you can't invoke it against Louis. That's presidential succession stuff. But I get your point. It's been a jungle of a day. And we're not even getting into there's still more stuff, let's put it that way. I had a note earlier today from Sailor Chick just to get an idea, because look, on our side of this whole impeachment thing, I guess some of us are maybe treating it like watching a lifetime scoreline come across for a baseball game or box scores or whatever, but no. And yeah, I made a joke about impeachments. I did that. It was a joke. But we're realists over here. You know, we're like that sign in those meeting rooms that says, reality spoken here. And we know what's going to happen to any bill of impeachment in the Senate. We know who and what Moscow Mitch McConnell is. We know his oath to the Constitution means absolutely nothing to him. So we're not even bothering trying to figure out how you go about removing a convicted president. Because the president is not going to be convicted. Now, some of us, and I include this community in that number, some of us wonder how much harm impeachment will do once he is acquitted by the disloyal, un-American Republican pissants in the Senate. But nobody's talking about killing anybody. Not so on the other side. Like I said, I got a note earlier today from Sailor Chick. Subject line, crazy maggots. I was perusing, she writes, Twitter today, and came across an account of a maggot who was tweeting various threats regarding senators who vote for impeachment, especially Republicans. He's an IT guy in Northern Virginia, Many of us notified Twitter and contacted the FBI tips line. The account's down as of now. He has a second account, but it's not been used yet. Sending along a screenshot of several of his tweets as I was reporting them. Joe H. Heinzen works for Oracle, pro-life Catholic, and people wonder why I'm not Catholic anymore. He also mentions that a militia will take out Sanders when they get the go-ahead. The three he refers to in the one tweet are Romney, Collins, and Murkowski. I saw that tweet as well, but I think he deleted it before I got a chance to capture it. This is what we're dealing with. These people want a war. Check this out. This is chilling shit. I understand that Secret Service is aware of a neo-Nazi group waiting for go to take Bernie out of race. No longer. Let's go to the bottom. Those three voting for impeach will not finish their terms. That means Romney, Murkowski, Collins, maybe. Those three voting for impeach will not finish their terms if they vote for impeachment. I have info that a group has been formed and trained to prevent them from coming back ever again to their Senate seat. Never to be heard from again. American Virginia-based militia will be taking responsibility. Understandably, odds are great that this action could start civil war number two. There will be violence if any rhinos vote for impeachment. Virginia militia has been formed and have order to eliminate them. It will be impossible to stop it once it starts. I know of at least three who have been targeted. There are two or three more selected as maybes. No long guns will be used. All 9mm pistols with extended mags will be used to take out anarchists. And I understand that Secret Service is aware of a neo-Nazi group waiting for go to take Bernie out of race. Now, this is a guy claiming he has knowledge of these things. And I'm not trying to sensationalize this by any stretch of the imagination. It is a horror. Thank you. Thank you, Sailor Chick, for sending that along. Heller, by the way. Yeah, the Heller decision. That's where Fat Dead Tony Scalia said that the Second Amendment could have reasonable limitations put upon it. Thank you, Ron and Steve. But you hear language like that, and guess what? Odds are good that some of that chatter is real. Do you think it isn't? Because I think it is. I think we've got too much gathered data that tells us it's real. There are too many Dylan Roofs. There's too many El Paso Walmart shooters and Dayton, Ohio shooters. And look, while we're at it, let's talk about what happened in Pensacola. Saudi Arabia is not known for its liberality or its progressive politics. The guy that shot up the Pensacola Naval Air Station may as well be listed among the conservative numbers because he was a conservative man. You don't get much more conservative than a Saudi. And then we find out what? We find out that not only did a Saudi perpetrate the murder, but that, oh my Jesus, his Saudi pals stood there while he went on his rampage and videoed him doing it so they'd have a souvenir. Holy shit. Does that give you chills? It does me. Of course, I think it's safe to say that I'm never going to be someone to be accused of being a big fan of the noble, serene, puissant, high, gracious kingdom of Saudi Arabia or their homicidal, bloodthirsty, barbarian royal family. Mm-mm. Nope. So it did not surprise me when I found out that, lo and behold, some of his classmates had stood there and videoed his homicidal mania. But let's take a moment and remember some past facts. Do you remember when George W. Bush, during the Reign of Error, hosted the King of Saudi Arabia and held his hands walking through the bluebells and kissed him right on the mouth eater? You remember that? Remember how that made your stomach just flippity-floppity? And the Republicans said, well, you know, that's a Saudi cultural tradition because they come from a deeply closeted homoerotic culture. No, they didn't say that part. That was just left for us to infer. Well, you know, the Saudis occasionally have sex with goats, too. Hopefully George Bush won't fuck a goat. No, that didn't happen either. No, they just walked through the bluebells holding hands like a pair of seventh graders after the prom. And then they kissed on the mouth. Happened. Don't hold it against me. And the Republicans gave him a pass for that. Then you fast forward to the Barack Obama administration, and Obama makes a diplomatic trip to Japan, and he gives a little bow to the Emperor of Japan. And right-wing heads exploded like Slim Whitman playing to the Martians in Mars Attacks. Bloop, 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 bloop. Mm-hmm.
God damn it, he's destroying America. He bowed to the Emperor of Japan.
Had a conniption. And then we have to fast forward to the reign of Nitwit Nero, who literally curtsied. He curtsied like a little girl in her first fucking communion dress. He curtsied. Well, that should bring us up to speed. Let's check in with Defense Secretary Mark Esper over on Fox News TV Radio Rwanda, explaining about the Saudi guys, the Saudi dudes, standing there videoing their buddy murdering people instead of trying to stop him. Yeah, well, hang on, I don't want to miss any of this. Like Aerosmith, I don't want to miss a thing. There we go. Okay.
I also was told that Psalm 1 or 2 were filming it. What's unclear is, were they filming it before it began, or was it something where they picked up their phones and filmed it once they saw it unfolding? That may be a distinction with or without a difference, but again, that's why I think we need to let the investigation play out.
But I mean, that would not be a normal response to film one of your colleagues who's shooting Americans.
I don't know. I'm not trying to pass a judgment on it at this point in time. You know, today people pull out their phones and film everything and anything that happens. I also was told that Psalm 1 or 2 were filming.
If you felt the need to kick furniture or shriek like a goddamn banshee, don't feel bad. Don't feel bad. Because I had to watch that clip several times before I stopped shrieking like a banshee. Because that's some evil shit coming out of the mouth of the actual Secretary of Defense. And it's not even halfway decent reasoning. Not that that should come as a surprise to us, but again, let's go back to it.
That may be a distinction with or without a difference, but again, that's why I think we need to let the investigation play out.
But I mean, that would not be a normal response to film one of your colleagues who's shooting Americans.
I don't know. I'm not trying to pass a judgment on it at this point in time. You know, today people pull out their phones and film everything and anything that happens. I also was told that...
He won't pass judgment. If it had been a liberal doing it and a bunch of Move On members sitting there videoing it, he would be passing judgment like he passes fucking Metamucil every morning. But we don't want to offend our dear, dear, dear partners in peace, the goddamn Saudis, because the Saudis pay cash. And then there's the question of, hey, huh? If you read other reports about the homicidal maniac barbarian Saudi, you'll find that the week before he was playing clips of mass murders. And none of his Saudi pals said a word. Yeah, what was that again, Mark Esper? What was that at the beginning?
I also was told that Psalm 1 or 2 were filming it. What's unclear is, were they filming it before it began, or was it something where they picked up their phones and filmed it once they saw it unfolding?
He says that may be a distinction without a difference. Yeah, it kind of is. That's a distinction without a difference, because the real distinction is that whether they were shooting beforehand, before, if they were videoing beforehand or videoing during, they all knew that their brother Saudi had been watching mass shooting videos the week before. And you also know that because they're Saudis, they think we're scum. Now, this is not about Islam. This is about Saudis. And one of the interesting things about this is you can talk to people on the left and you can talk to people on the right, and it's one of the rare occasions where you will get the same response. I know a woman. She's a Republican. Fine person. Good person. Decent person. She's one of those people that you would probably be worried if she wasn't a Republican. By the way, she's about as never Trump as you can get. But she told me a story once about what it was like to work in Washington, D.C. around Saudi men. And how they and how they treat American women. And how they grasp and grope. And this was long before Donald Trump ran for president. They were operating under the assumption that they could grab any American woman by anything and get away with it because they were Saudis and they were covered. And these are flyboys. And flyboys are infinitely worse. Absolutely. Absolutely. As James in Illinois reminds us, don't forget the tan suit. Oh, Barack Obama wore a tan suit. And that very nearly caused the collapse of the Republic. Damn Skippy, it did. The only people allowed to wear tan suits are good, decent Merkins. You know, like Ronald Reagan, who not only wore a tan suit, but he wore brown shoes with a black suit. Yeah, but that's okay. Subject line. Subject line, repressive, closeted Saudis. And you know, it's kind of funny. The rest of the Muslim world despises Saudis too. Ask an Indonesian, ask a Malaysian, ask an Indian. The Saudis are like the clan of Islam. Brother Deacon Asa says, I swear to the sweet feathery baby Jesus, I'm not making this up. Back in my college days, I had a few Saudi fellers studying in some of my classes. They used to tell tales of how they'd get their jollies under a repressive theocracy like the Saudi gulag. Sex with animals, especially stray dogs, was quite the common theme among said tales. They may have been making it up, but here's how I know there was some truth to it. Uh-oh. They had a method to deal with those instances when the animal locks up, as they do when threatened or scared. In order to release their junk, the Saudis told me, they would have to pour warm water on the animal's rear end, as his noodly appendages are my witnesses. I swear this is a true story. That's too sick not to be true. And sadly, it's also probably verifiable by other people who have had run-ins with him. Ooh. I think I'm going to need the eye bleach just from reading that. Oh, wait a minute. What's that, Todd? Stop being such an uppity pink Negro. He's addressing that to me. Of course. Well, I am what I am, and it's all that I am. And this is Moran Monday, we're absolutely filthy with Morans. And we done let Louis Asparagus Gohmert eat up about half of it. But that's okay, because you know there's more, and we got a little bit of time. Hey, again, thanks very kindly to Steve and Ms. Karen, little Cletus and little Twiggy for getting us started and getting us down from 290 to 280. But we kind of parked. We got started, and then we kind of parked on that 280 number. And it would be great if we could knock it down some, at least finish last week. The other, you know, the other $80. That'd be wonderful. But so far, we're stuck there. We're stuck there on the 280. Flavio with a note. Saudis, an anecdote. My little brother roomed with a Saudi at University of Michigan, and the guy absconded at the end of the semester. See, Flavio's paying attention using that Louis Asparagus Gohmert word in its proper context, absconded. My little brother roomed with a Saudi at U Michigan, and the guy absconded at the end of the semester without paying his portion of the rent. My brother was responsible for the entire rent. Well, that's because he had the privilege of carrying a little Saudi princeling on his back. Oh, yeah. See, the right wing's not out there having a conniption over what Mark Esper said. Because, you know, it's okay for a maggot defense secretary to bow and scrape and make apologies for barbarian princes. But God, do you remember how the Republicans shrieked and screamed and howled over the Obama apology tour? Thanks to Jack in Shreveport for reminding me of it. So, Ron and Raleigh with a note. You realize if an Israeli had done the same thing, the result would be the same. They'd probably have given him a ride to the local kosher deli for a bagel with lox and a schmear. Ooh, that's painful. But the Israelis, I mean, they enjoy privileges that other folks in that neck of the woods do not enjoy. I arrived late to the program, says Darlene in Connecticut. Did you mention the Republican paid-for protester heckler at today's hearing? That was so staged. Yeah, that was, I think the name I gave him, Darlene, was Neckbeard McMaggot. I was a bit weirded out by the format of the hearing. Attorneys questioning attorneys didn't quite sit well with me and felt the lack of a swearing in under oath was odd and that the Republicans had a point. What am I missing or misreading? Help me understand it if I'm wrong. Asking for a friend. It is an odd format. I think under the best of all possible worlds, you'd want fact witnesses there, but that was taken care of last by the Intelligence Committee. And I think in a way, circumstances sort of forced themselves on Gerald Nadler because these goobers are having a purple polka-dotted blue screaming hissy conniption wanting a minority hearing. Minority hearing. Oh, God, it went on for days and days. It felt like days and days today. And I swear, that Doug Collins, Doug Mouthful of Collards Collins, I don't know if he's been this annoying all his life, but the shabby way that he treated Daniel Goldman, really, really, Daniel Goldman would have been within his rights to say, you know, Congressman, if this was 1850 instead, if this was 1849 instead of 2019, what you just accused me of would have us outside. Shame on you. But then again, that's me, and that just would have made matters all the worse. Hey, this is cool. Let's go over and check in with Todd and see what what's on his mind. Hey, Todd. Yo, Todd. Todd. I know you hear me. At least I hope you hear me. Bob? Yeah, there you are.
Oh, that's crazy. Okay. I don't know, man. I think somebody's listening to me right now. Like,
well, I am.
Somebody call me same. No, wait. Somebody call me as a, like a friend, but, you know, but they're in a different place. Maybe they hung up. I don't know. It was very strange. That the coincidence. Yeah, that's too much of a coincidence. I don't know about that. Who knows? God damn, it's weird. You don't understand. I was thinking about her today, and that's crazy. Oh, Jesus Christ. Oh, I'm sorry. I'm off on another. Oh, man. Fuck is going on. Look, all right. So the reason I called, you know, I remember being, you know, in the dorms in the 80s, and there was a wonderful friend of mine from Sally on the hall, okay? And he was the most laid-back person, one that I've ever met, period, in my life. And he was shouty. And I'm not going to say his name, but, you know, he was, like, very open about what it was like. And he was so laid-back. And I'm like, oh, now we see all this. That's why he was so laid-back. They don't worry about anything. They do whatever they want. He was telling me about how they drink in the basement. And, you know, like he said, foreigners, you know, you have to know somebody. If you come over here and drink and act like, you know, the ugly American, you're going to get locked up. But if you, you know, you come over and you stay with your, the person that you come to visit and all that, because they drink, but they want the foreigners to follow the rules. I don't know if you can hear me or not. I really don't.
Yeah, I hear you.
Okay. Because the person just called back and, yeah, I don't know what's going on. Anyway, that was my experience, and like for some reason in the '80s, I don't know, it wasn't just my school either. There were a lot of, you know, a lot of people from Saudi. There was a lot of oil money running around, and you know, you see them out when you go out to play pool. You know, you go out and play pool for a beer. You know, that's the big thing. You run a table, you know, play for a beer, and you run a table all night, man. You're on the spotlight. It's a beautiful thing. You know how to play eight ball. You know what I mean? So, you know, they like to play pool. But that was my experience. It's really, but see, he told me, all right, get focused here. They do whatever they want to do because they're all related. It's just what hierarchy are you in on the family. And I'm like, I'm telling you, we were tight. Like, he had a very nice car. He sold his car for like $500. This is like a brand new luxury car. We're in college. And everybody's like, oh, really? And then he ended up, he gave it away. He was like that. You know, you won't worry about it. But to hear, you know, and we always thought, you know, I always thought he was kind of bragging about how it was. Now, you know, and, you know, as time went on and you pay more attention to how people operate, you know, it's a different culture. That's all I can say. And I'm not trying to stereotype. I'm just saying. It's a different culture.
Well, and you know, there is such a thing as a bad culture, and the Saudis have one.
Well, exactly. That's enough. Exactly. They take the passport. They have a lot of like Indonesian people and people from the what Asians would consider the lower echelon of Asian folk over there doing what like black people and Hispanic people do here, but they take their passports and they make them like slaves.
Yeah, for all intents and purposes, the Saudis use Filipinos, Malaysians, Indonesians, Pakistanis as slave labor.
Okay, so I don't feel bad about what I'm saying.
No, it's been documented over and over again. I mean, Agnes, when she was in college, went to school with a Saudi girl and or a Saudi young woman and her two Saudi brothers. The young woman was a nice person. The two boys, and they were boys because they certainly didn't behave like men, were absolute shit weasels. And see, this is not this, you know, I want to be clear that nobody thinks that I'm thinking that this, that I'm engaging in some sort of racism or no, this is bad behavior born of privilege.
That's why I called, Bob, because I didn't want you to have to address this issue Like out of the world.
You remember that.
We are not trying to stereotype. People don't understand. Those folks.
You remember the wealthy shitheads in Scent of a Woman.
Oh yeah, with Al Pacino maybe.
Yeah. And they're rich and they look down their noses at Charlie, who's a scholarship student from Oregon.
Right. Like, why are you working so hard? You know, all you have to do is just relax. Right.
Yeah, well, those are just typical white American shitty, snotty rich kids. But it's the same thing. That access to wealth and access to privilege has a way of turning people into horrible human beings, especially in their youth. And if they are not taught anything, the next thing you know, they're having their enemies cut up alive with bone saws.
Well, see, exactly, and that's what. Okay, let me slow down. Because this person, he was absolutely. The reason I know all this is because he knew he was different. He was like, I don't want to be like that. Like, he would act really poor on campus unless, like I'm saying, he was like three rooms down from me. You know, so we were close. And, you know, like, I knew how much money he had, but everybody didn't know that. Because he had a very sparse room. He didn't have all that, you know. Because, you know, that was back when people were taking sofas in your room and all in your suite. You know, just, but none of that. Now, he had a nice little Buick. He had a nice Buick. And when we went out to drink and play pools, no problem with money. But
yeah, but see, the fact that he was
one person. But now looking back, see, this is the thing. Now looking back all these years and seeing what's going on now, it's exactly how he had described it to me. And you know, and like he's a diver, like, you know, he does scuba diving and stuff like that. So, you know, he's got like connections down there in Crystal Lake, Florida.
Yeah, well, broad generalizations aren't, you know, that's the thing. They're generalizations, not specificizations. But the fact that he was driving a Buick tells me that he was not very high up the Saudi princeling pecking order.
He probably wasn't. I don't know. But all I know is what he told me. He was never hurting for money, and like he just basically gave the car away. I mean, it was a new Buick. It was nice.
But still a Buick.
I think he was just frugal. I think he wanted to be low key because there were other guys there, and one guy, his name was Fossil, which is a very popular name, I've noticed.
Oh yeah,
this dude was arrogant as a. Oh my God. See, that's what I'm saying, and you know, maybe your better half has seen that, because you know, people, it's just messy. You know, I hate having to get into this. Into this stuff about how, you know, I'm not trying to generalize, but I'm just saying it's the culture there, right? So like you said, maybe he was, right? He probably wasn't, but even then, even middle class there, they don't pay for anything. They pay for nothing. All they do is exist, and they get money for existing.
Fine racket if you can get into it.
All right. So listen, this is the question. When are you going to get out on the Blackstone?
It's tough right now, man. It is tough. I mean, I actually over the weekend, I had to fire it up briefly, just because you've got to do it from time to time because water will gather underneath the cover.
Yeah.
And if you don't want to peel back the cover in the spring, and find that it's turned into a big chunk of rust. You peel it back, you dry it off, you fire it up, you oil it, and let it smoke a little bit, and make sure that the season stays on. But it was just too crummy to do anything. Just yucky. I mean, blech.
Well, we're in that, you know, we're in the fog now. You know, the seasonal affective disorder, you know, situation is. A month, you know, it's around.
And you know, actually, Agnes and I were talking about this the other day, because one of the funny things about the arrival of winter is that the arrival of winter means that the days get longer. I mean, I think maybe it has something to do with we as human beings being set apart from our natural world so often and so thoroughly. But if you want to be completely honest about it, the summer solstice marks the longest day of the year. Mm-hmm. And so every day after the summer solstice up to the vernal equinox or the autumnal equinox, the days are getting shorter. And then at the autumnal equinox, you've got 12 hours of day and 12 hours of night. And so from the autumnal equinox to the winter solstice is actually the hardest season to get through. Because
so we're on the upswing, is what you're saying.
Well, no, as of December 21st, we get on the upswing.
We're close to it.
Yeah, with the first day of winter, days start getting longer. But it also represents temperatures getting colder. And I mean, well, I think about it a lot in conjunction with other stuff, Todd, like the fact that, do you ever think about things like this? We so-called modern humans are more assaulted by noise than, let's say the generations since the Industrial Revolution.
Our, I don't know, but maybe you have a story about it.
Our senses are more assaulted by sensory overload in the form particularly of noise than any other humans on the planet ever. You know, you don't have to go back that far in time. Maybe 1000 CE, okay, pre-gunpowder.
No, you're right.
Pre-gunpowder.
20 years. I'm thinking the cell phone.
No. Pre-gunpowder, the loudest thing on Earth were often things that human beings weren't around to hear. Like the massive boom of a piece of glacier calving away into the ocean at the north or the south pole. Or the massive or the deafening trumpeting of elephants on the savannah.
Or Krakatoa.
Or the explosion of a volcano. And of course we've got that going on in New Zealand right now. But that was as loud as it got. You know, the concept of sound and the concept of speed are the two things that probably set us apart from the rest of humanity.
Let me ask you this question.
Sorry, that's our philosophy portion of the program.
Well, and it's a good thing, because this is a liberal arts institution. So do you ever find that when you walk out in the woods, you know, anytime you get a chance, like walk far enough out where you're not hearing cars and this and that, it's actually loud?
Yeah, I get what you're talking about, because the natural in a state of quiet, violations of the state of quiet become profound, and they're almost overwhelming. But I pity people who live in noisy places. Agnes and I the other night were watching one of my all-time favorite films, Local Hero. You familiar with it? Burt Lancaster, you know, 80s, early 80s. It's just a wonderful film. But this guy goes from being in Scotland, where the filmmaker does a brilliant job of showing how the peace and tranquility is periodically shattered by an RAF jet flying over. But that apart from that, it doesn't get much louder than what the band is playing at the Cayley. And then he goes home to Houston, and he opens the sliding door in his apartment, and the camera shows you Houston in the far distance, and the first thing you hear is this almost white noise, rumble of modern life, periodically punctuated by sirens. And that's our world. And I told Agnes, I remember way back when I was working for CNN, one of the moments when I realized I had to get out of there and get the hell back to West Virginia was when I would sit out on my apartment balcony, and didn't matter what time of day or night it was, there was always just this undercurrent roar from the traffic hurtling past at speeds incomprehensible to people 200 years, 150 years before. And that noise and the jets going over to Dobbins Air Force Base and the sirens of the cops and the ambulances and the fire trucks and stuff. And it was making me crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And even where we live, you're not completely immune to it, because it will still screw with your head. And when you do, to get to the point that you raised, Todd, when you do get to that place where you get to experience true quiet,
mm-hmm.
it fucks with you.
It's weird. Yeah. It's like an acid trip. I'm telling you.
As a human being constantly subjected to noise of an unnatural nature or of an unnatural quality, when we finally experience solitude and quiet, it unnerves us.
See, I'm in the woods. I'm in a city, but I'm not. This place is in the woods. It's just carved out of woods, and the animals allow us to do our thing. Because I tell you about the deer family, but then they're up the street. Seriously, yeah, because you can hear, when you sit down, lean up against a tree to get settled and stop crushing leaves, you can hear the tiny animals under the leaves. You can hear the ants. You can hear the birds.
Yeah, and it's cool as shit, isn't it?
Well, and the last, right, it is. And you know, it makes me think about, excuse me, and it's the last thing I'm saying because maybe someone else wants to talk with you. But, you know, I think maybe people have forgotten how to be introspective. Whenever your nighttime is, whenever, you know, people work on different clocks, but whenever before you lay your head down, it's good to be introspective and reflect on how you're, you know, what happened that day. Were you good to people? Were you bad to people? Did you, you know, what did you accomplish that day? And be introspective. Because we see now what happens when people are not introspective. And I think it's underrated, and I think it needs to be talked about more. And that's my food for thought for today.
And well presented. I think there's a lot about modern life that our only protection against it is not thinking about it. It's like, I just got a note from Jim saying, folks in New York City can't sleep without the noise of the roaring traffic's boom. Eventually they could, but it becomes, it becomes part of their world until they, are able to divorce themselves from it. You still there, Todd?
I hear you perfectly now.
Yeah. The technical issues with the call coming in. Yeah.
All right. Well, that's all I had to say.
Speed wrote in and said, noise, thunder and lightning, loudest thing any human being had ever heard until the invention of gunpowder. Isn't that something to think about?
It's a lot to think about. Well, that's what makes us, you know, one part of us always likes, oh, God, think about this. whenever anyone starts a fire, a fireplace, on the beach, in the woods, it becomes a focal point. Why is that? Why are we still so connected with that?
I don't know. You got a theory?
I don't think we're that evolved. I really don't. I think that there was something this primal. We need fire. It's very basic. I'm just saying, for instance, when I was in San Diego and they had public fire pits, and there's just total strangers, and everybody's out there, and it's like a nice sized fire pit. And they use those concrete things in a parking lot where you're supposed to, like your tires are supposed to stop, kind of those types of things. And it's a fire pit. And people invite you back to their house, it's total strangers. Because, you know, when you're standing around a fire and you're talking, you kind of break down all the bullshit. Like, okay, I'm going to invite this person to my house or I'm not, because either they're okay or not.
I constantly think about the nature, you know, the nature of evolution is mutation. The tool that evolution uses is mutation. And evolution is neither positive nor negative. It seeks only to see how the species can survive. It's just change. It's not good change. It doesn't have intent, is what I'm saying.
I think
what we are doing is we are evolving ourselves. We are subjecting ourselves to evolutionary change that comes through noise and speed. We've all seen the premise Investigated.
Mm-hmm.
Think of Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure.
Mm-hmm.
And when Beethoven discovers the synthesizers in the music store.
Mm-hmm.
Because my grandmother once told me that she remembered the first time she ever saw an airplane fly over.
Changed her life, didn't it?
Well, it sure changed the way she looked at the world. And she was born into a world that already had railroads.
Mm-hmm.
I see, I was watching something the other day, and it was set back in time, and some pair took off walking. And you're thinking, man, you're going to be walking a long fucking time. Well, that's what everybody did. It's not like there was a train station or an airport around the corner. We accept the times in which we live for the times in which we live are. It's like the old joke about the two young fish swimming along, and the old fish swims by and says, "Water's nice this morning, isn't it?" And they go and the two young fish go, "Okay, boomer." And as the old fish swims by, the two young millennial fish look at each other and say, "What's this water that fucker's talking about?"
Wow. You said a mouthful, didn't you?
Well, I think I didn't mean to, but I did.
Well, okay. Let me ask you this.
I'm glad you jump in with these little excursions into... discourses on existence.
I don't even know how we got here. Honest to God, Okay, now I remember. So I feel like that we would be in a better position if we had more of our leaders would be introspective and just get some quiet time and understand what that's about. But maybe that's, you know, that's.
Well, yeah, and see, the poets and the artists and so forth have been warning us about it since it first began. You know, Wordsworth, I mean, the Industrial Revolution wasn't even fully underway, and Wordsworth, you know, the Industrial Revolution wasn't, but capitalism was, and Wordsworth was warning us. We lay waste our days, coming and going, getting and spending.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I don't know why this is on my mind, but it is.
Well, it's a good thing, but who else is talking about this? This is important. Because, I mean, it's frightening when you either listen to Washington Journal live or on the podcast or... You know, in general, you know, the open phones. You know, we're in a little bit of a pickle here, and you know, folks are just, you know, everybody's different, and you know, pointing fingers and castigating people is not going to solve the problem. But
yeah, neither is leaving Donald Trump in the White House.
Now, all right. So, you know, what the fuck? These motherfuckers, is it me or is Doug Collins a fucking slave owner? Is he an overseer?
Yeah, you took the words right out of my mouth. No, he's not. He wouldn't be your well-heeled plantation type. He'd be your sadistic overseer type. Okay, wait. Let's work within the Faulkner universe here. Doug Collins is not a Compson. Doug Collins is a Snopes.
Holy shit. All right, let's flush it out.
Well, you know, your Compsons... Are your hoity-toity, no, got good table manners types, and you know your Snopeses are your badass, mean-ass rednecks, do anything to get hold of what they wanted, barn burning, horse thieving types.
God Almighty! But
I was proud of myself. You know, I've been coming up with things that Doug Collins has a mouthful of ever since I started hearing him talk. But I think I hit the mother load today. He is Doug Mouthful of Collards Collins.
That mug gets on my nerves, man. I hate to say it. He's out of control. Why don't he just sit in the back of his F-150 with his dog and shut the fuck up? I don't understand it. Fucking slave.
No, I bet his dogs don't even like him if he's got dogs.
What? Tell me more about this individual.
Oh, I'm glad you reminded me. I need to spend a little research time on Doug Collins. I need to find out how such a horrible human being winds up in the Congress and what kind of horrible human beings send him there. And moreover, who ran against him last time? What kind of decent human being did whoever it is that lives in that district in Georgia, for all, probably looks exactly like a malaria germ? Yeah, what did they see in him? And of course, you realize he's showing off the way he is. He's acting out, to use the psychological term, because he's pissed off because the governor of Georgia is forever his goddamn enemy now, because the governor of Georgia did not do what Nitwit Nero ordered him to do and make Doug Collins a senator. And now Doug Mouthful of Collards Collins is thinking that he is going to run for that Senate seat.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he don't even have the common sense to put hot sauce or vinegar on his collards.
I feel a little bit relieved that I'm not the only one who
I just get this weird vibe off of this individual.
Oh, and no, that shitty, smarmy, hateful bullshit that he tried to pull on Lawyer Goldman today. Because the thing is, I read up a little bit on that whole phone records thing, and they're trying to turn it into another, another deep state conspiracy. They didn't have to do any cross-matching to get Devin Nunez's number. It showed up when they subpoenaed the recipient number.
Boom. It was right there.
And then all you had to do was go down and say, whose number is this? Whose number is this? Whose number is this? Whose number is this? And you get it. But he's got Emery and Marveline sitting in those matching Barca loungers down in the single wide in the Ballerina Swan Lake Trailer Park and Country Club, thinking that, oh Jesus, it was hateful. I'm done with you. It's like you'd seen my cousin Vinny. I'm done with this guy. Only sounding like he had a mouthful of collards.
It's amazing. His performance, my breath has been taken. My breath has been taken by his preponderance, the ignorance. And he's just, like I'm saying, there's that vibe off. Like, man, you have slaves and you have a whip in your fucking closet and you can't stand no back bucks. I mean, this motherfucker starts. I just say no. I vote no. 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 Mm-mm. What say you?
No, I'm in total agreement. Yeah.
Well, okay. So, all I'm saying now is that it's all about the roast turkey. I'm telling you, man. I'm gonna start selling these turkeys about $2.50 a whop. You know, nice big turkey. Just done right. People just don't want to spend it.
Well, you know, come next year, I'm gonna make sure that I got space and everything, and I'm gonna go to Kroger's the day after Thanksgiving, mm-hmm. and I'm gonna buy 20 of them $5 turkeys.
It's true, because I heard that. You have no
idea. I'm going to sell them for $20 a piece.
You really did get a fucking turkey for $5. Where yes. the hell was I?
Yes, I did. That's and it was a fresh, no hormones, no antibiotics, no nothing, good quality, fresh turkey.
All right. I know.
I'm going to get 20 of them next year, sell them for $20 a piece, and Bob's Black Market smoked turkey.
Man, you can't go wrong. And people are buying this shitty ass lunch meat, whereas you can have your fresh. I mean, there's a whole lot of meat on the turkey, and then you get to make the soup at the end. And this is slow food season. You know what I mean? This is soup season. Yes, that's all I can say. Yes, so you were telling. Damn it! Now I'll be going there tomorrow.
It's too late now. You got to go. Now you'll have to go day after Christmas.
Well, shit. Okay, I'll figure that out. No, but, I mean, listen. When you roast a whole turkey, when you really get it down, and I can say this in 5 seconds. Honest to God, this system works for me. You can do it every way you want. You get your good turkey. It has to be a good, fresh turkey, number one. If you start with shit, you're going to end up with shit. You know, nice, fresh turkey. Or, you know, fresh, frozen, whatever. High-quality turkey. All right. Let it thaw out. Drain it. Put it in your bacon. Put it in your hotel pan, bacon pan. Now, I find that a semi-fat top works well, which means you cut, on one left or right of the fat. Okay, because if you're a true spatchcock, I guess, is right through the middle and you cut back on all that. I'm not going through all that bullshit. So you just, you know, left to right, open it up. And then you want to spray the whole turkey with, like olive oil spray, because they have olive oil in the can now, blah, blah, blah. And then take your,
you know, if you're a real cook, you have your
I'm a purist, Todd, because I don't spray. Sprays have propellants in them.
Not necessarily. No. Think about it. Man, let's use our thinking cap. You put your olive oil in, like, these misters.
No, look at your good iron skillet. You use that spray in your iron skillet, it'll be sticky and gummy in a couple of weeks.
No, you hadn't let me finish. Anyway, you have to spray it so that the rub sticks to the turkey. That's all I'm saying. That's the only reason you do that, so the rub sticks to the turkey. All right. So, and there's no basting, no none of that shit. And you just, all you have to do is cover up the breast and the wings, like, three quarters of the way through. But the main thing is to have that, if you have an oven, I mean, just crank it up. That motherfucker has to be on 800 degrees before you open it up.
Whoa.
As soon as you open up, heat escapes. You want it to be hot. You want it, and close it back up and let it cook for like 15 minutes till you smell it. You think, oh my God, I'm burning my turkey. No. And then you turn it down to 310, 320. And I mean, you will have the perfect turkey. Now, it's up to you what type of, you know, dry rub, whatever, blah, blah, blah. But that's why you spray it first. So that when you sprinkle it on, you know, it sticks. So, but what happens is that you have your own homemade lunch meat. You know, because any real cook, ooh, you have at least two or three good knives. You know, you got a big chef's knife and you got a bread knife and. No, so anyway, I would advise anyone, if you're serious about cooking, you need a good knife and a knife sharpener. Otherwise, you're just fucking around looking like a dumbass. So anyway, yeah, you do that, and then you have your great lunch meat always. And then you have good soup. Like, you know, it's soup season. You know, come on, man.
Oh, it is. Turkey carcass
nobody
soup all the way.
You got to eat right.
No, this is the season of turkey carcass soup.
Man, and anytime you see any miso paste, acquire it. Don't even ask how much it is. Don't even fucking worry about it. If you got to write a check. Get your miso paste. It will keep you healthy. That's all I can say. It's fermented soybean, and it's good for you. You put a dollar
tasty
for that
too.
In the bowl. And
yep. All right, man. You have yourself a good evening.
You too.
I'm glad you jumped in this evening for the to be the. You know what you were? You were the first caller on the new time frame.
How no about way. That?
Yeah, wait.
Oh wow, that's a big deal.
Yeah, because we're 2 hours and 7 minutes into the program now.
Well, damn, that's pretty damn cool.
Isn't it just?
It is. Well, I'll talk to you soon.
All right. See you, Todd.
All right.
Later, man. That's our buddy, Todd. And we go from Todd to Tracy. Hey, Tracy.
Hey, baby. How you doing?
You know, getting along.
Yeah. So, remember that picture I sent you last night of the jambalaya?
Yes.
Okay. So, I forgot to tell you that I bought the Ninja kitchen system.
You did. You.
I don't you, say it. You love me still, remember?
Yeah, well, I do.
I didn't buy the one with the spiralizer because I have, and here's another reason to hate me. I bought the attachment for my KitchenAid that peels and spiralizes at the same time.
Wow.
Yeah, they were having a Black Friday sale at Macy's. That son of a bitch cost me $69 as opposed to like $100 and something.
That ain't terrible.
No. Not for a KitchenAid attachment. So now I know if I really want, I don't really think there's anything else that I want because there's only like this, the pasta maker. That you actually make the dough just rounded and dull, and it does macaroni and spaghetti and stuff like that.
Oh, I love a good pasta maker.
But I don't really, I mean, I'm trying not so much stay away from pasta, but it's not something that I can justify buying. You know?
Yeah, because, I mean, really everybody wants one, but then once you go through it once, and it's a learning curve to learn how to make it, and it actually gets easier the second and third and fourth time, but it's such a thing the first time through, you're like, I'm never going to fucking use that again.
Right, you're traumatized by the first effort, and it's like, I'm not going to do this, but it's a piece. So it comes with, like, four different blades, plus the peeler. So if you don't want to spiralize something, you can just peel. So as a peeler and corer, or you know what I'm trying to say.
You got it. You get it right the first time.
Okay, I did. Okay, cool. And so if you want to just, you know, peel your apples or your potatoes and then, you know, do whatever you want to do with them, that's what you can do. Or like I said, you can, you know, spiralize your potatoes. And so it spiralizes and slices as well. So that means, you know, if I was into making apple pies, it would be the perfect thing to make apple pies with and all that sort of stuff. But so back to the kitchen, the one that I have, because I got the one that's a step down from the big one where, you know, it's push button, it's touch screen. And that's another thing. It was hard because they sent me an email. I got the intelligence, my Ninja Mega system from Macy's, and it was $150 something. And then have you ever heard of Parabus?
No, I don't think so.
So how it works is you go onto their website and you put in, you know, you give them access to your email. Basically, especially when you buy stuff online, or like in my case, everything that I buy, basically now when you buy something even at the store, you know, at a brick and mortar store, they ask you, how do you want your receipt? Do you want it by email? Do you want
I've seen that more often. Yeah, I noticed.
So how Parabus works is, you know, so now they have your email and all your receipts of everything that you bought. So it's because, you know, most stores do price adjustments. So if, say, like in my case, when I bought my blender, my system, it was $159 or whatever it was. But then Macy's, there was a price drop within this, because you have like a week or 2 weeks to do a price adjustment. I don't really, it depends on each store. Some stores, it's 2 weeks. Some stores, it's even 30 days. Like I said, it all depends on the store. So anyhow, I got an email like a couple of days after I bought it to tell me that it had gone down in price by $30. So the only thing I had to do was call Macy's with my order number and tell them, you know, this price, it went down. Can you give me a price adjustment? And yeah, that's all I had to do.
That's a beautiful thing.
So it constantly scans your email to see if anything that you bought has gone down in price. And the only thing you have to do is call the store and tell them you want a price adjustment. How fucking cool is that?
That's a decent idea, and that's retail trying to save their ass in the age of Amazon.
That part. So this thing, it has the big tall blender to and then it has a food processor as well.
Damn.
That comes with this year's. That comes with the chopping blade and the
How hard
blade.
Is it to wash? There's the real
not at
test.
All. No, not at all, dude. Because that's the first thing Alex said. He's like, Mom, how hard is this to wash? It took me. Now, the only thing is, I almost cut my finger off. Well, no, it wasn't that bad. So I made the mistake of putting, because you can remove the blade, you know, depending on what you're using it for. And I made the horrible mistake of taking the chopping blade out and putting it in the sink. And I was went to go pick it up after realizing my mistake and just slightly brushed my finger. It wasn't, I didn't even touch it. It was just kind of just a whiff of my finger. And I'm like, ow, ow, ow. And it wasn't like the spurting blood thing, but yeah. I'm like, had I gotten any deeper, it would have been bad. So, yeah, you know, I learned the hard way that, you know, you got to be incredibly careful.
Well, I got a little something to share as we, and you, of course,
to the food thing.
You're the second caller for the new time slot.
And let's hear it for diversity. So you had the black guy from South Carolina, and then you got the queer black female from the West Coast. Damn, you're doing the thing.
Yeah, you know what? It's just how we roll here.
Nobody can ever accuse you of not being diverse.
But we're two hours and 15 minutes into the program, Tracy.
Right.
And I got a little announcement to make.
Yes.
I have not had now this isn't me quitting or anything. It's just me testing the waters. When I woke up this morning, I went 3 hours before I had a cigarette.
That's fucking amazing.
And this evening we are 2 hours and 16 minutes into the program, and for the previous hour before the program, so I am 3 hours and 16 minutes without a cigarette.
Woo, doggy. See? I mean, because see, and
I'm not quite at the point where I'm hugging myself and rocking yet, but I'm getting close.
You're not curled into a fetal position and crying and sucking your thumb.
That yearning for that nicotine, man, it's weird. I mean, it doesn't make you sick at your stomach or anything, but it's, how can I explain? You can feel it in your goddamned arms.
That's the first, because that's kind of how I felt the first time that I tried to stop using sugar. And I realized that it was bad that first couple of days, the craving and stuff. And I'm like, I don't like this. I mean, I still don't eat as much sugar as I used to. That's for damn sure. But still, I've never kicked a habit like nicotine because I thank God that I've never gotten, I mean, cause like I said, back in the day, I was definitely what you would call a social smoker. I would only smoke when I drank. And I only drank when I was in, you know, social.
Yeah, and you always and you always smoked that brand called OPC.
OPC.
Other people's cigarettes.
Other people's cigarettes. Right. No, I would buy my own.
Okay.
I would buy my own. And typically it would be, and then on top of that, it wasn't real cigarettes. So it was fucking flavored cigarettes. Well, they have real tobacco, but you know what I'm saying? It was, you know, but, you know, like cloves and vanilla, you know, I mean, girly shit. But, and then I was, you know, and if I did smoke real cigarettes, I don't even remember what brand I would smoke. Now, if it wasn't a flavored cigarette, then it was OPC, other people's cigarettes. But I would smoke, and this is when I drank a lot more than I do now. Scotch and soda.
I took steps to try to make this more bearable. I don't have, for instance, I bought a bag of full size, not those little pissant teeny tiny Tootsie Pops. I bought a bag of full size Tootsie Pops. I got my favorite Tootsie Pop, or one of my favorite flavors. Yeah, I don't like the chocolate ones because it doesn't taste like fucking chocolate.
What is that taste?
Oh, I don't. It's like Band-Aid glue or something. It's just horrible.
You stupid Band-Aid glue.
I like the grape, the cherry, the orange, and the lemon. I don't like the chocolate. I don't like the raspberry. And I sure as shit don't like the new flavors, you know, mango, caramel, and But anyway, so
wait a minute before I forget. Did you ever have back in the day Charm lollipops?
Oh God, yes. And they've ruined them. Now, I can tell you, they've ruined them. That or my taste buds are old. They were the bomb.
No. They were, because they were thick, they were big, they were thick, and you get a Charmed lollipop, and you could suck on that sucker for, you know, for
yeah, and you didn't, and you don't have to, and it wasn't like a Tootsie Pop or a Blow Pop where you got that bullshit, bubble gum in a Blow Pop. I mean, please, really.
I
can handle the Tootsie roll, but I just prefer for a sucker to be a sucker. And so, I loved Charms. Because they were really vibrant and tangy and tart, and they've taken all that out of them. They've taken that's all gone. So I unwrapped a cherry Tootsie Pop, and I set it here on the desk in front of me. And it's like, man, if you gotta work that oral fixation, it's there. I have not touched it.
Good for you. Cause see, look, okay, you're talking to somebody.
I mean, it's not like this is Midnight Express and I'm in some fucking Turkish prison or something, but it is definitely not fun.
No, I look at, okay, my wife, who is blissfully out of town for the next few days. Yes, I said it. Yes, I missed it, but yes, I am so blessed. She's gone. She said, give me a break. Because she has no life. She seriously has no life outside of me. And I'm not saying that as to be bragging. She does not. So when, you know, on those rare occasions that she leaves to go out of town, because she's up north visiting her brother, and it's like, and she's already whining about coming home. And I'm like, no, stay up there, honey. You need to spend time with your brother. But anywho.
no self-dealing involved there at all.
No, baby.
You need family time. You just stay there. Stay there.
You need time with your
I don't
family.
Want you to feel like I made. I don't. I'm, I don't want you make. I don't want to make you feel like I made you come home too early. You just stay.
No, everything's fine. We're fine. The house is fine. Kimba's fine. She doesn't really care about me. It's all about the fucking dog, Kimba. So that's all another conversation. But anyway, Jan gets up in the middle of the night to smoke. If she wakes up.
My mother, when she was pregnant with me, my father even talked about it. I mean, I think I was born addicted to nicotine. My mother, when she was pregnant with me, would wake up at 3 o'clock in the morning, turn on the light, and have a Raleigh.
So you were like a crack baby.
I'm a cigarette crack baby.
You're a cigarette crack baby. So, she smoked, you know, because she wakes up not long after I do. She's usually up and starting work at about 5-6 o'clock in the morning. So by 8 o'clock, she didn't have at least 3 or 4 cigarettes.
Well, my law school torts professor described a pot of black coffee and a half a pack of Marlboro Reds as the lawyer's breakfast of champions.
Yeah. I mean, and there you go. Now, she doesn't drink her coffee black, which is funny because on the occasions that I do drink coffee, I drink it black. Isn't that hilarious? But this is her routine. It, usually since I'm up in the morning before her, I make her coffee. Because like I said, I'm not a coffee drinker. I drink it on occasion. So I make her coffee. She goes outside, she smokes her cigarette, and if I'm not pissed off at her, I'll make her a cup of coffee with about Coffee Mate vanilla, now not just plain old Coffee Mate, Bob, no.
No, please don't, I can't.
I know. I know, besides it's Nestle, we don't like Nestle, anybody that has soul does really not like Nestle because they are the devil because they are raping, they are stealing our water.
Oh yeah, Nestle's just evil.
They're evil, and I've been trying to get her to drink if she's going to drink that shit, at least drink a different brand, but no. So she, you know, she has her Nestle French vanilla, her coffee made French vanilla, you know, and I had to learn that, you know, because again, I don't care, but, you know, I just, you know, when we first got together, I made the horrible mistake of pouring the coffee in and then adding the vanilla.
No. You got to pour the stuff in the bottom because then it blends and you don't have to stir. And you done, and the hot coffee doesn't get cooled by the cold stuff. The cold stuff gets warmed by the hot coffee. Now I get this.
Okay. Motherfucker, remember, bitch didn't drink coffee. So, you know, I did not realize that I was committing a cardinal sin, you know, so now I know.
Well, I mean, what was there, you know, shrieking involved? I mean, it's just a gentle thing. It's an explained thing.
There wasn't much shrieking. No, there wasn't shrieking involved because this is when we first got together and we still really liked each other. It was during, you know, when you're courting and you're on your best behavior. And so it was explained to me by, you know, and again, because another friend of mine kind of chided with her. She's like, well, didn't, I said, bitches, because now I had, see, don't gang up on me about something that I don't, that is, it is not world, is it going to bring peace to the world? Is it going to bring peace to the Middle East? Fuck no. So don't get on my ass about some fucking coffee and creamer. Because my friends were like, well, didn't you know, I'm like, bitches, don't drink coffee. No thing for me.
I waited 10 minutes for a cup of decaf the other day.
See, not a thing for me. No. So anyway.
But the problem is with me, even though it's decaf, I like decaf that tastes like coffee, and that's a problem cigarette wise. So I've got me some decaf teas, because tea, nice. I don't want to smoke with tea so much. Because tea is just
a different
olfactory taste bud thing. It's the bitterness of the coffee that makes you want the funkiness of the tobacco smoke, I think.
Drinking tea is so genteel to me. Fuck, speaking of tea, I meant to stop at Trader Joe's and get some goddamn ginger tea. Okay, I'm sorry, I'm back.
You know, as much as we love Trader Joe's, you know where you need to get your tea, don't you?
No.
This is another one of those unpaid product placements. Republic of Tea.
Is that something on? Online?
Yeah, it's online, and you know, I'm sure that it's entirely hipster white people that run it and order it. But goddamn, it's good.
Well, see, there's things that I don't go out. You know, tea is a every so often thing for me as well. So it's not like, you know, that's why I can go to like Trader Joe's or Cost Plus World Market and get my tea because, you know, it's good and it's easily available and I don't have to, worry about, you know, buying shit online. Even though stuff gets to me pretty quickly, rather, you know, except for my shit that I ordered the other day, I've ordered another rash guard and I don't know if it was coming from Tibet, but Jesus. But then I got to remember, right now, how cold is it where you are right now?
How cold is it where we are? It's getting down the mid to low 20s at night.
I'm sorry. Okay, so today, so we're back to kind of the real California weather. Right now, it's 69 degrees. Don't you dare call me what you're thinking.
I have learned to control my inner monologue. I am proud of myself. But in case you were worrying, it's not just you. 2 weeks ago, I ordered something from someone in Western Pennsylvania, which is all of 3 hours if I drive it. It arrived today.
Well, it was like when I sent you that first care package, and I got
right. No, we're forever United States Postal Service now. Hey, Tracy, all kidding aside, I've reached the end of my tolerance. I've pushed myself beyond my abilities,
and what
so
are you gonna do?
Well, I'm going to knock off a half an hour early.
Well, no. But, oh, before you go, I just wanted to tell you one more thing about the. So, I like, you know, in relation to the picture of the jambalaya that I sent you. So, the food processor bent thingy is like, I think, like eight cups. So, it's like, this thing is like 64 ounces. It's pretty damn big. So,
that's a half a gallon.
Yeah. So, I threw in. You know, because you know when you make jambalaya, you got to do, you know, celery, onion, and bell pepper, yeah? And you know what a pain in the worst part about doing anything with those things is the prep work. Dude, let me tell you what I did. I threw all that shit in the processor at the same time. Bob. And I just pulsed it. Oh, my God. It was chopped so evenly. Within a minute, I had my onion, my bell pepper, and celery chopped at the same time within a minute. And we're talking a whole onion.
Oh, I know. It's just a delight, isn't it?
A whole bell pepper and three ribs of celery or four. Boom. Done. So next year's gumbo. So now, because the main reason why I bought the damn thing in the first place is because we both know how much Mama loves to cook, but the worst part of it is the prep work.
Oh, sure, the prep and the washing up.
Right, and this thing, it cleans so nicely. So, yeah. So here's the thing, though, because I had a single-serve blender, another Ninja, that I need to get rid of. Because, you know, Jan's like, well, what are you going to do with this? I'm like, I know there has to be somebody that needs one because it's taken up, you know. But, you know, it is, you know, I wanted to get the one with the spiralizer and all that, but I just couldn't do it. I mean, it was just, and from what
I don't know, that's an attachment too far.
Right, because like I said, I you know. No. And with, like I said, I have the thingy and all that I attach to my KitchenAid. So that part. So, and the other one does make ice cream as well. But again, I mean, I had to, you know, so.
With the bowl and the freezing. No, you're holding out for the Cuisinart that you just plug in.
Yes, I'm trying, you know, but again, these things, but. So I haven't done anything in the blender yet, or because it comes with the blender, the food processor, and a single serve thing just to make, you know, your own personal smoothie.
Jesus, that's crazy. I can't wait until I can justify bringing one of those into the house.
And then I bought the accessory kit with the processor that has a grater. And the grating blade, the slicing blade, and a salad shooter or something like that. So, I have a real food process.
Oh, you're good. No, you're going to have so much fun, Tracy. You're going to have so much fun.
I can't wait to, I don't even like apple pie, but now that I.
But I'm going to make a bunch of them.
But you know I'm going to make one, just to, you know, because I'm going to be able to, I got the thing to make the dough because it has a dough blade. And then, you know, with the thing for my KitchenAid and, you know, coring and like I said, peels, cores, and slices the apples at the same time. And so, like I said, not a huge fan of the apple pie, but I'm going to make one just so I can say, ooh, maybe I'll do that because I'm going to my very first Christmas party. I'm supposed to make dessert. So what I'll do is I'll make an apple pie.
Oh, that'll be fun. And you can even use the food processor to very, very carefully make your pie crust. And won't that be fun?
Yeah.
All right,
yes.
Tracy, you have yourself a wonderful evening. I'm going to take my nicotine jonesing self and knock off 26 minutes early and go and get a little. But I'm making progress, okay? This isn't, you know,
No, baby, I am so
some days.
Proud of you
some days it's, you know, with some things it's one day at a time. With me and cigarettes, it's going to be like
a lifetime.
No, it's going to be a minute at a time for a while.
And like, just the fact that you've gone this long is huge. Because again, I've never been addicted to cigarettes or drugs, but I've been addicted. I have an addiction to food, so I know how hard it is to, you know, to abstain from stuff that you have.
Well,
we're gonna
learn a little bit over the next few days, and I'll just ask the Horn Family Community Congregation to be a little bit tolerant of me. I might be a little bit spastic, I might be a little bit scatterbrained, but hopefully this.
I'm sorry.
You're laughing at me.
No. It's just you said when you said a little bit spastic, a little bit scatterbrained, but I'll be fine, family.
Yeah, but it's all gonna be good. Yeah, we'll be good.
So, in any case, you do what you gotta do. Get you some rest, and go ahead and hit that cancer fix. But you know, but
like a ton of bricks.
But be proud of the fact that
I am.
As long as you did.
I am. I mean, look, I mean, this is a big damn deal for me.
It is. And this is the things that I'm learning in therapy, because I have a way of minimalizing my achievements, you know, because like my weight loss. And I'm like, well, yeah, I've lost 50 pounds, but I have some, but I have X amount of, you know, I still have, you know, like 60 pounds to go. And my therapist was like, but bitch, did you lose 50 pounds? That part. But, you know, or when I could say something, well, I do this, but I don't know how to, I'm not a really strong swimmer. Bitch, didn't you not know how to swim a little while ago, and now you're swimming how many laps?
Right, exactly.
So
exactly.
You have to take those things, the wins, and glorify and say, fuck, I did that shit.
Yeah, exactly.
And smoking,
exactly.
You did that shit. So anyway, I'm going to let you go so you can, because I know you're like, are you scratching like a crack hole right about now?
Ain't no hair left on my arm.
Anyway, you do what you do.
Scratching like a crack hoe.
Crack hoe.
Oh my God. Tracy, have a good night, dear. I can always count on you for the moment of affirmation. Bless your little heart.
Well, bless your heart. See, now that wasn't bless your heart. See, I just got cussed out without being cussed out.
No, that wasn't the Southern bless your heart.
Okay.
Bless your heart. Tracy, take care, dear.
I'll see you later.
Bye. Bye now. Oh, I needed that laugh. I did. So no, I mean, I'm kind of. It's not like, you know, climbing the Matterhorn or anything, but it's something, and I managed to keep most of my equanimity and not lose my shit. So we're gonna write this up as a win, and I'm gonna thank you all very kindly. Thank you to Steve from Georgia Stan and Miss Karen, little Tweety and little Cletus, thank you very kindly. And I noticed something. We're done with fundraising for the week. How about that? I had an anonymous note telling me we're done, and we are. So we'll pick up with things maybe a week from this evening. But that's the last that we have to hear of fundraising, and you have no idea how happy that makes me. So that's it. Thank you to all of you who support the program, however you do, either by subscription or a la carte. A reminder, the 9th of the month is officially the loneliest day of the month. Khalil's out there holding the fort down by himself on the month on the 9th for subscribers. If anybody'd like to jump in alongside Khalil, that'd be great. One last thing, a note, because this was very thought-provoking for me. What I was saying about the Saudis videoing the murders, Lady B took the issue and and rotated it 45 degrees in space, and it turned into something entirely different. And I really do appreciate her ability to do those things. Saudis filming murders. Dude, they learned it from us. Do you really not think there weren't rogue American soldiers filming their atrocities and it was covered up because that shit's illegal and inhumane, goddammit, and us Americans would never do that? Time out. Bless. Oh, damn, Lady B, you cut through on things. You know what that was? And you know what nobody in the for-profit media has come up with by way of an explanation? What I didn't come up with, but Lady B did? What's happened in the last 2 weeks? That's right. A Navy SEAL got off. Donald Trump saved him from being bounced out of the SEALs after he was convicted by a court-martial competently and legally impaneled of having his photograph made with a Muslim corpse. You think that shit doesn't go through the Muslim world like wildfire? It does. Payback is hell. How about yeah, we did it. We did it, and it wasn't covered up, and it was tried, and it went out in public, and now the guy has been given a fucking pass by the president for a war crime, and lo and behold, a week and a half later, a little Saudi princeling with an axe to grind, and the guy was a Navy SEAL in the first place, and he opens up and guns people down on an American naval base. Connect the goddamn dots. Lady B says, baby, I have no doubt we've done it. We're just better at covering up. Or maybe not. And Lady B continues and says, and I know this is an age-old argument, but our movies and television are notorious for shit like this. We love getting revenge on terrorists. We tell ourselves over and over again that everybody knows it's fiction and nobody actually behaves that way. Okay, but how do other cultures see it? The Saudis aren't stupid, but they recognize barbarism when they see it, fictional or not. We're thought of as barbarians. We're the enemy. Filming us being shot dead don't mean shit to a radical. It's a sense of pride, the ultimate badge of honor. Like us, they love violence as an act of revenge. It appeals to prurient interests like those Faces of Death videos did in the 80s. I know you got members of the Horn community that are into television and film industry. I'm not picking on them. This is America. Make your money. But we are not blameless. Fictional or otherwise, we take delight in humiliating the bad guys. To them, we are the bad guys. You don't think they want to go Jack Bauer on us, too? It's wrong, and I'm horrified for the victims' families. I have no idea what we can do, but we better get over our shock and outrage. This is what happens when you disregard the rules. We've never played fair. You reap what you sow, whether you believe you deserve it or not. P.S. I went to an HBCU and later grad school with several Muslims and a few Saudis. The wives learned how to drive here, knowing that they wouldn't have freedom like this at home. It's supposed to have changed now, but I knew one guy who was desperate not to have to go back. He and his wife loved their freedom, and to think we take ours for granted every single day. That's awesome. That is awesome. We already did it. And of course, they will never, ever tell us if Nitwit Nero giving a pass to a war criminal inspired another dude, a Saudi, to go and shoot up a naval base. They'll never tell. It'll never come out. So that's where we find ourselves. I'm not knocking off a half hour early after all. I'm knocking off a quarter of an hour early. And there will be more to process tomorrow from the madness that was the hearing today. And another story that's out there that I was talking with Dr. John about early this morning, and it deserves time to stand all alone by itself. So thank you again, all of you who keep the program on the air. Thank you so very kindly for sharing your precious finite time engaging in the program, however you so do. Thank you to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you to Sparky and Steve in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, headon.live. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Later, y'all.